It's a good show.
Okay, we're also, something you should know is that we're really, really terrible at cold opens, and we've never had a good one.
I can scream really loud for a couple of minutes, so you see what
happens. I'd love that.
I'd give this some energy.
That would probably be the best cold open we've ever had.
Would you like to give it a try?
Yeah! I don't know. I can introduce the show. I know what it's called. But do you guys have sponsors you guys want to shout out? Like, how do you open the show?
Literally, this is the opening of the show.
Yeah.
We're recording.
Yeah.
Great. We're off to a great start.
Yeah. This is the cold open.
So, I'm screaming at Dan, who is very sleepy. So I'm sure.
Do we have a special theme song?
I'm waiting for Jimmy to scream.
Woo! Whitey Wongs!
Okay, great. Yeah, we do. And here it is.
I like that one.
I know. That one's very cute. That was by Astrid at Mall Ghost.
Thank you, at Mall Ghost.
Every episode, you guys have a person sending in a song?
It didn't start out that way, but like a lot of people have been submitting remixes. So we've had a streak of what, like 3 or 4 episodes where we've had new songs.
These are good.
Yeah, yeah. They're really great. Yeah. We have like really, really awesome listeners who do this. And Yusan does a really good job of like sifting through them and like picking out ones he likes. Remember when he came in one day and was like, I can't wait for you guys to hear this one. And it was that like Bowser sounding one. okay, welcome to Whiting Wongs. I'm Jessica Gao.
I'm Dan Harmon.
And today we have a very special guest that I'm very excited about. Jimmy O. Yang, comedian, actor, and writer.
Hey, guys. You know, I feel self-conscious calling myself a writer in front of you guys.
You have a book coming out.
Yeah. No, it's out.
It's out. It just came out, right?
It's out on the coffee table.
All right, that's true.
That's the only place you can buy
evidence.
It. In this studio.
Yeah, come to Starburns.
It's like the Wu-Tang album. There's one.
And we bought it.
Jimmy O. Yang, that's Irish?
Yeah, that's what I feel. You know, so my real name is Manxing O. Yang, or in Mandarin, it's O. Yang.
Wancheng.
O. Yang Wancheng. And O. Yang, it's like a two-word Chinese name, which usually Chinese names is one word.
Yeah,
right?
Super, super rare.
So people get really confused, especially when I first started doing stand-up, because I spelled it together, O-U-Y-A-N-G. That's how it is on my passport. It's too many vowels. People get confused when there's 3-4 vowels in a row.
Yeah.
So they're like, O-Y-O-Y-A-N-G, you know? So I gave up. I separated them.
I know. It would have been so much. You should have just done an Ellis Island thing and made your last name O apostrophe Yang. And
my dad does that.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, old Chinese people love white shit.
They do love. Yeah. They're all white supremacists.
They are. There is a segment on Vice called like those weekly reports on Vice on HBO. It's called Rent a White Guy.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I love that segment.
Yeah.
Literally, any white person can go to China, especially like the more rural towns. Like, I'm not talking about Shanghai, but you know, a smaller town in China. And people look at you like you're an instant celebrity.
Really?
You get paid in China for being white.
Yes.
Sit in a club.
Yeah. If they see you walking down the street, club promoters will run out, grab you, and be like, I will pay you for your time for you to come and sit at my club, because just seeing a white person at my club elevates the club.
It's like cool as fuck.
Do you have to be handsome?
No, you just have to be white. You can do this, Harmon.
I wasn't going to say that. You know what I mean?
If I had any pride, I would be so offended by that exchange. Do you have to be handsome? No, you can do this, Harmon. Yeah, I wonder if they do have a line though, like if you kept the ugliness meter, you know, like how ugly a white man can you be before a Chinese club will say, no, that's going to hurt business.
Yeah, but see, you're still going by Western standards of what people want in a club, because for them, your skin color is infinitely more valuable. It's more currency.
Well, so in other words, then you're saying that you'd have to go into Elephant Man territory. Like, you're technically white, but you have
you
such
might
a horrible...
still be cool.
Yeah. You might get, a discounted rate.
It depends on the location of the fibrosis stuff. That if you can tell that you're Caucasoid, Did you think they'd still...
Is it cover up, like covering up your face so much they can't tell that you're white?
Right. Yeah.
See, that might be the issue.
They have to be, people have to be able to see that you're a white man from a distance. Like from, if they're walking down the street and they glance in the open doors of the club and they can see you sitting there, if they can immediately identify you as white.
I really find that, I don't know if hard to believe is the right phrase because I totally believe that this is the case and I've heard it before, but I find it hard to understand. I don't because there's just so many people in the world. You would think that if this were true, that there would that would represent, then there'd be this glut in the market, you know, that it would, like, well, any way that you can, if it's true that you can actually, like,
well, I don't think, A, I don't think a lot of people know about, like, people outside of China don't really know about it. And then, B, it's like, is it really worth you buying a ticket to China
wandering around
hoping someone gives you $100 to sit at a club?
It's like the balance of it is, like, it would have to be if you were already over there doing something else.
Right.
Yeah,
so, you don't get rich off of this. So there's no economy of this.
Yeah.
It's a huge industry where everybody's making $1 million. Trust me, everybody would be going there.
Yeah. If you're like a white college student and you happen to be doing a semester there, then that's a great deal for you.
Right.
But like, I don't think, I'm not telling you to quit your lucrative career as a screenwriter to go over there.
I've always thought if I never made it as an actor or whatever, I would go to Japan and be a male domi.
What's that?
Wait, you live in Koreatown, you should know. The domies were like, you're in a karaoke and people sit down with you, girls or guys, and serves you drinks and keep you company for money.
Oh, I saw a documentary. They're escorts, but not sexual.
You don't have to have sex. So in Japan, a lot of lonely...
Right, you're just being a host.
A male host.
Yeah.
That's what I thought I would be good at.
But why would
that remains to be seen.
So you're as a Chinese American, I got confused there for a second because you were like, I would go to Japan and be one of these things, and I was like, is that something that you can only do if you're Chinese in Japan?
No, it's just that the job only exists in Japan. Yeah, the job only exists in Japan.
Or Koreatown, I think.
Well, but I think you have to be I don't know if there's male ones in Koreatown. There's just hostess bars where you have to be a lady.
Yeah, I've actually dated a couple of girls that, like, were, you know, that domi stuff. And they weren't necessarily, they weren't prostitutes whatsoever. And they didn't have to be Asian. A lot of white girls. And then the good thing is, if you work around so many Asian people, you ended up kind of being into Asian people. So that's when I come in.
Is there how do Asian men stereotypically feel about white women?
Love them. I think stereotypically, I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Right?
It's kind of a thing.
Like they're like a trophy ethnically. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Especially like I'm very Asian. I grew up in Hong Kong, lived there for like 13 years. And everybody around me was Asian, right? So when you see a white woman, that's like exotic. That's what you see in magazines. That's what you see in like the movies.
My ex-wife, she was the daughter of a Navy chaplain. So she was a military brat when she was growing up. She spent a lot of time in Tokyo. She was actually born in Tokyo. And she has a bunch of ads because she was a baby model in Tokyo, because at the time, and I don't know if it's still the case, but like, if they're gonna do an advertisement for like a, whether it's a juice box or a crib or whatever, and it's a mother, Japanese mother holding a baby, they prefer it to be a white baby.
So
it's like my ex-wife was just like in all of these like ads for diapers or whatever, and it's like with no.
White supremacy is very strong in Asia.
Very, very. Yeah.
You'd think all the white supremacists could just move to Asia then.
They'll be loved.
Like they're hated here.
Yeah. They should.
Go to China and hang out in bars and people give you money to drink. Like this is right up their alley.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
All right, so did we solve white supremacy in America by doing this?
Yeah, go back to China, Nazis. I added the word back so that they it was speaking their language, you know. Can't
so
just
they,
tell people
they,
to go somewhere.
So they recognize the phrase, and it didn't turn them off.
Yeah, they start rooting for it. Like, go back. Wait, what?
Well, what should we cover?
Well, okay. Well, first of all, so I've been reading Jimmy's book, and it's very good. It's called How to American, and it's a really, really fun, easy read. And it's, I mean, it's basically a memoir, and it covers, like, it starts from when you, like, immigrated to America at age 13 to L.A., to Beverly Hills, I might add.
Well, my dad faked my grandpa's address so I can go to Beverly Hills High School.
Which is very Chinese.
Very Chinese.
To game the system for education.
You came here, you're an actual immigrant at a pubescent age. That's a unique
eighth
thing.
Grade. Was my first year of school.
Man, it's tough to immigrate in middle school when people are fucking vicious.
Oh, dude, like, you could, going from one suburban high school in America to another at that age is catastrophic.
Right, and I have to go to a different continent with a different language.
Yeah, where I'm sure people were thrilled to demonstrate their wokeness to you.
Oh, yeah.
It was, by offering their Cokes for you to pee pee in.
You'll notice what he's drinking right now in the studio.
Well, that's because he's traumatized. He's
to like, relive my trauma.
Jimmy always drinks a Coke because he's like demonstrating there's no pee pee.
No,
in
it's to lull you, the white guy, into a false sense of security. Oh. You're like, oh, well, he's drinking a Coke. He wouldn't do anything to these Cokes.
He's trustworthy. Yeah. He's drinking an American product.
That's the me play joke part. Okay. Got it. So was it then traumatizing? I mean, were people mean?
It was, but I think that forced me to be funny. I had to. The first thing I learned was to talk trash, like when people was talking back to me. But good thing also about LA, it's very much a melting pot. So I was put in ESL classes with Nigerian kids, Filipino kids, which is a flawed system, by the way. How are you going to teach a foreign person English by putting them with other foreign people that don't speak the same language?
Yeah, you know what's crazy is, like, you know, I grew up in the San Gabriel Valley, which is, like, 90% Chinese people. Mm-hmm. And, like, there were kids that I knew in, like, 6th grade, 7th grade who were born in America and still in ESL.
Yes, that's sad.
It's so crazy. Yeah.
We had, I think, Latino kids and Persian kids in my high school in Beverly High that was in the same ESL class I was in. Yeah. He was born here.
Yeah.
I had an ex-girlfriend who was an English TA, and she told me a really sad thing, which is that Latino kids in Los Angeles, they grow up in bilingual households, a lot of them, and which makes them very, I mean, that's like, they're getting like a huge extra part of their brain exercise that other people aren't. So you'd think like, oh, that's great, and it's a huge advantage. But like, then they get into composition classes and they start like getting low middle grades because if your household is monolinguist, you're going to have an edge when it comes to, like, writing prose and stuff and focusing on that. It's a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah, and also your parents, like, can't help you with that stuff, too. And the other thing is your brain is working twice as hard because it's working in two languages and it's working in two cultures. Like, the unique thing about being a child of immigrants is that, like, you also have to kind of be a third parent as well, because you're definitely going to learn English faster than your parents. Mm-hmm. You're going to learn how to assimilate faster than them because you're a sponge because you're a kid.
Right.
And you're trying to survive. And so then you get to a point where, like, your parents depend on you to do all every form, like calling the cable company, like all that shit you have to do. Yeah.
And you have to, in turn, teach a parent, you know, about the culture and everything.
Yeah, and then they don't believe you. Or if they're like my parents, they don't believe you. My mom didn't believe that wisdom teeth needed to be pulled out. And we had like a big argument about it where she was like, you made this shit up.
What, they don't do that in China? They don't.
Oh, I can't tell if this is a Chinese thing or if this is a my mom thing.
Right, which is also now you get into a very confusing category.
Totally.
It's like, do I actually come from a weird family?
Yes, it's hard to tell.
Or am I just Chinese?
Totally. Like, I remember when I was in high school, my neighbor's kids also went to my high school, and their house got teepeed one day, and my mom was like, oh my god, did you see what happened to their house? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, I think that this was her theory of what happened. She thought that the family teepeed their own house as a sign to the neighborhood that someone in their household had died. That was her theory.
That is
so many leaves.
So Chinese.
And she was like, I better go over there and see if there's anything I can do. And I was like, no, it's a prank. I'm telling you, this
is
this is a youthful prank that people do to each other in high school. And she was like, That's crazy. That doesn't sound real.
I mean, because then you realize, like, your mom makes more sense. I mean, like because the act of TPing someone's house makes no sense.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
that's the wonderful thing about alien culture is that you first go, like, that's crazy, and then you also go, we're crazy.
Yeah. I had to physically bar her from going to our neighbor's house and being like, who died? Is everything okay?
I brought a bowl of sandpiper legs. It's a traditional, it keeps the ghosts away.
The best is whenever Dan riffs on what he thinks Chinese names are and then Chinese customs.
I'm glad you're amused by that.
All right, so Jimmy, one thing I really wanted to ask you specifically about is, like, what auditioning is like to be as a person of color. Like, mm-hmm. what are the roles that are out there for people of color and what the process is like?
I think in the beginning, it's definitely different than now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're just trying to get on anything.
Yeah.
And mostly the things that I feel most comfortable with that I thought I had a better chance was the Asian roles.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, there's just less competition.
Yeah.
Right? You see the same old 20 Asian people always there. And in a way, it's easier to start because there aren't like a pool of a million Asian actors trying to act. Whereas if you're just a regular looking white dude, there's a lot of competition, right? So in a way, it was easy to start. But then when you get to a certain point when you want to do more,
right,
the roles don't, like, I can't be picky with roles still.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because in your book, you talk about how you kind of hit a ceiling where you were only getting, like, two-line parts, but that's all that was available.
Right. And, like, now, hopefully, I've transcended being just the Asian dude, and, like, I'm just a funny dude.
Right.
Yeah. And then there's some parts out there that I can, you know, read for, but it's not like, you know, I feel like when you get to a certain level, it's better to be white. But in the beginning, it's good to have some kind of niche that you fit into.
But that's also only because there's so few other, like, competition-wise, right, like, there's so few other actors that are the same as you.
It's almost like some iPad game where it's just, like, this balance of resources. Like, maybe you hit a sweet spot, but then someone else would go, oh, man, it's just, like, a matter of degree. Like, I'm from blank background, and even though I'm only competing with five other actors, the macro truth is that they only audition two roles a year for,
right,
it's that, and the yeah, of course, the crucial difference is, are you, and we talked to Dante about this, it's like, are we looking at characters and therefore actors as, your trait is that you're Asian, and then you're fucked because there's like, it's like, oh, you got to wait for the Asian character to be written, and then on top of that, you got to compete with all the Asian actors.
Most of the time, the character, it's not a character. It's just because if your only trait is that you're Asian, like, that's not a character.
Right. Know? We talked about that too. I thought that was very interesting the way he put that. I felt a couple synapses forming in my brain because it was like he used an example that was really made it really clear where it was like, you know, I know the difference between a Paul Rudd type and a Brad Pitt type, but then you throw, he used an example and it was like, oh, and then there's the Asian guy. And it was like, oh, how come you can't have like five Asian guys up there and go like, where's the Asian Paul Rudd and the Asian Brad Pitt?
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, and some of that is like, well, you know, geez, well, that's not going to happen overnight. We're going to become so homogenized or whatever that we're like, I'm a big fan of all 70 kinds of Asian man, but maybe a different split
But maybe one would be nice.
Or maybe just like the different split is like not, is it's letting go of that coupling where it's like, oh, race is a character.
Like, Asian shouldn't be a type. Like,
yes,
you know, the quirky
absolutely
guy, the handsome guy. And that's happening. You know, I think, like, I always... So Crazy Rich Asians, that's coming out. That's where... That's our Black Panther. Because you got, like, the good-looking Asian, the funny Asian, you know, the romantic Asian, or, like, the amazing acting Asian, right? So you get a whole spectrum of Asians. So it's not just Asian is the type. You actually get types within this movie, right?
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And when I auditioned for this, This is kind of a victory for an Asian actor in a way because I didn't just get typed as Asian. But at the same time, it wasn't a moral victory personally because I called my manager. I was like, hey, so I know Crazy Rich Asian is being made into a movie. I don't care. I know I'm always usually the supporting guy, but let me read for the lead. This is a huge movie for Asian people. I don't care. Let me just go in. Give me a chance to read for the lead. And my manager was like, look, Jimmy, I don't know how to tell you this, but they're looking for a good-looking guy for the lead. And I'm like, okay. Like, I was sad, but, like, I was like, I get it. You know, that's not my type. My type is, like, the college kid or, like, the quirky asshole kid or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're actually splitting types within Asians, which is so rare. Is a victory.
Yes, agreed. Yeah.
Now I have to ask you a question, though, which maybe can segue into, like, what are you willing to do in terms of, like, putting on patois and stuff like that. But you just broke into your agent voice and you sounded like a game show host. And I guess it's the same question I ask like my New Zealand actor friends who all come over here and play American doctors and they talk like this and then you go out drinking and they're like, oi, 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 oi.
Right.
I love that your New Zealand accent sounds like
a Chinese version of Chinese accent.
But also,
yeah, the
it
most racist
like
Chinese.
A Chinese mattress spring.
It was ironically because I didn't want to embarrass myself by doing a bad New Zealand accent, so instead I opted to snowblow offend every human. I don't think anyone was not offended by what I did. Oh, yeah, my mom's offended. She doesn't even know why. She's like, whoa. I'm pretty sure that was an impression of a woman in menopause. But you have a distinct and also very sexy notable accent riding on your when you're talking normally. But then you did your agent and it was
more normal in a way because I think in a way. I'm putting on an accent right now, even though I'm speaking my normal English speaking voice, because I didn't talk like this when I first came to this country. I talked with an accent.
Yeah.
Jing Yang, the character that I play in Silicon Valley, who's an immigrant, that might actually be really who I am, and this is an act in a way.
How much of an accent does he have on Silicon Valley?
He is a pretty thick accent, like a Mandarin accent.
So when people, it's like our friend Kumail, now his story is has risen to such triumph that he's just Kumail now, and hopefully you're just Jimmy now. But like Kumail, when he was auditioning, like he would talk about. It's like, you're a brown guy and you go in and like, what do you do when they're like, could you make this a little more? And they start using phrases that they're trying to politely skid around like they want you to do Apu. And like, what do you do? How do you react to that? There's different actors have different philosophies. Yeah. There's the philosophy that says, dude, just give me work. Pat Morita won an Oscar for Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Like you could even do good filling a role. Like, what do you want? The guy to talk like this? And then you fucking
that was
do
good.
It. And you make people cry.
He's coming for your job.
Oh, yo. This is good.
I love that'll become a thing. If you just tuned in, hopefully people can't just tune in to podcasts. Please don't think that me going oy was what you think it was.
You say that
it was
every,
my New Zealand guy.
You say that every episode as a peep. That's how people listen to podcasts.
I'm 45.
They pick an episode and they jump to the middle.
I know.
Of a thing they downloaded.
Well, I guess maybe you could be walking, brushing your teeth or something. You walk into the room where it's playing what are your thoughts about that?
So I think for me especially, I have a different point of view than, you know, what we call ABCs, like Asian-born Chinese or Asian-born Asians in general.
American-born Chinese.
I was the dude that had an accent, and I was the guy. One of the most painful things was when I came here, and sure, I didn't get accepted right away by most people. But the most painful thing was when other Asian people don't accept you, the American-born Asian people don't accept you because they don't want to be associated with a foreigner. Because they're like, I don't have an accent. Fuck this kid.
Yeah, because you're a fob.
I don't want to be hanging out with the fob. That was painful.
What's fob? What's that?
Fresh off the boat.
Fresh off the boat, yeah.
That's so sad.
Yeah, because everyone knows it's an airplane now.
So yeah, that was, you know, that was shitty, you know, and feel like even maybe this is just me, but like my cousins who were born here, I felt like they were like better in some way because they already know who Tupac was or something.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I had to learn about all that. So I always approached the immigrant character just playing a version of myself 15 years ago. Mm. And there are really good versions of those characters out there mm-hmm. that is very much worth playing. I mean, you know, on Silicon Valley and on Patriot's Day, I don't know if you guys seen that. It's the Mark Wahlberg movie. And there's character, Danny Mang. It's based on real life. Asian people, we don't get to play a lot of these like Oscar bait based on real life characters.
Yeah, we don't get to be heroes.
Yeah. And this dude was a based on real life Chinese immigrant that turned out to be an American hero because he escaped from like the Boston Marathon bombers and was the one that kind of called the cops after that and led to their eventual shootout and arrest.
They
tried to carjack him when they were on the run.
They carjacked him, drove him around for an hour and a half. He ran out at gunpoint and then, you know, alerted authorities. So, like, why wouldn't you play that role? I know Asian actors out there that will straight up say, I don't audition for anything with an accent.
Yeah.
That, to me, that's offensive to me. That's like you're saying, like, I'm better than you because you have an accent, right?
Well, it could be them, but that, whatever. I'm the white guy, so even in this, I'm the expert in whatabouting. But I was, like, mitigating that and going, like, well, I understand their...
Oh, I get it.
They get on that track.
Yeah. Right. I understand it, too, because I think that that attitude comes from a lifetime of experience of only getting shitty, like, Han from Two Broke Girls kind of roles,
exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
The Hollywood shuffle.
Yeah, or it's like convenience store owner, irate restaurant owner, you know what I mean? And so, like, I understand having this blanket policy of, like, I don't want to feed into that fucking stereotype. Yeah. I don't want to feed into hacky writing.
I think if Kumail were sitting here, he'd say that was pretty much his, he had to make it draw a hard line. Kumail has an accent. I mean, it's basically a British Empire accent, you know? It's a colonial accent. But he had to draw a hard line and go like, I'm just not doing that. And I don't know. Yeah. You know, I think that a lot of good can be done by individuals maybe making that decision. It's kind of random. Again, Pat Morita. I mean, the guy talks like me I think he's passed away. Yeah. Like he sounds like me, like naturally. And then he played the role of the most quintessential, like stereotypical thing. And like,
but he also got to be like Arnold, you know?
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's important for representation, you know, but in a way, like, okay, Ken Jeong, for example, I think he's great.
Yeah.
Super funny guy, but people gave him a lot of shit for the Hangover character.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, dude, like I'm sorry, but, like, I'm not good looking. He's not good looking. Like, not every Asian person on TV is good looking. I'm sorry. You know, I'm not helping you get laid in that. Like, I need to eat too, you know?
Yeah, and also, I'm very torn about the accent thing because it's like, you know, if I want to write something from my life that I feel that feels very real and I want to write about the immigrant experience, which is my experience, like, I have to, like, decide, like, do I want to make something where the character... Like, if I'm writing about my family, they all have accents, you know? And so to be true to them, the character should have accents.
It wouldn't be real if they don't have accents. I don't think that accent... It's a funny thing because the accent, the Asian accent is such a negative connotation in itself, but it's the perception of it, right? If you really think about it. Like, Peter Sellers, he did a French accent on the Pink Panther series, right? Got nominated for Golden Globes, comedy legend, everybody loves him. And Sofia Vergara, or all those Spanish accent, it's like sexy, you know? Uh-huh. Italian accent, men, is sexy. But why is it the Asian accent is nerdy and weird? That's not the accent. It's the people's perception of that accent.
Yes, it's true. Yeah. Well, that accent, our accent specifically, is very, very loaded because of the way that.
Well, I didn't mean to cut
because
out. I just had an epiphany there.
Because of the way we're even if when we are Americans, even if we're like second generation, third generation, if we're like eighth generation railroad Chinese people, who like we're seven generations back of people have not spoken Chinese.
Sure.
when we meet a person in America, they automatically think, oh, you must be from somewhere in Asia.
It doesn't matter if you're an American citizen. Yes. People always think you're Asian before you're American.
Yeah, exactly. If they ever consider you American. And like they'll be surprised that you speak English well, but they'll never be surprised that Harmon opens his mouth and speaks with accent-free English, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
That's very, very interesting to me, that idea of like, oh, we're not offended by, if Peter Sellers were to do, oh, I'm an Irish cop and all that.
Right.
And you see, yeah, the idea of the sexy Latin accent and things like that. Like there's like this bedrock of like, well, there's absolutely no way the Chinese accent is ever going to be high status in a white comedy.
Right.
So for that reason, unlike a French accent or a thing, and we're talking about in the arena of like an American comedy scene.
Right.
It's like what you're saying is, you're just saying like, you're trying to cure a cold by wiping your nose. Like, the problem is up here with our attitude towards the people, the accent itself, or whatever. Like, we decided, and sometimes that means like potential positive comedic effect for an individual. Like, it would be funnier, quote unquote, for the same unfair stuff for a Chinese person talking about Star Wars, you know, like a character that's like it, than a French person, I think, like a French guy, like talking like Inspector Clouseau going like, oh, my Boba Fett, you know, like it's not as funny. And I'm not going to, for the same reason I can't do the example of the other one. It's like,
oh, yeah, Star Wars.
You get a Chinese actor to like, or an Indian actor to like talk about like Batman or something. Like, there's a heavy tradition of that. Like, oh, this is the unspoken thing is
accepted.
This is very funny. Yeah. This is a nerdy, it's funny, it's silly, because they sound so silly. Like,
but I think on the other end of that, like, it's important. Like, Jet Li, I think, was in a way making the accent sexy.
Mm.
He already had an accent, and when he was in Romeo Must Die, you know, then people are like, yo, Chinese dudes are sexy, and now this accent is associated with this sexy Chinese man.
Yeah.
So I think it's more important to have positive representation of dudes maybe who have accents, but they're funny or sexy.
Because it's probably an artificial construct, because how far from Jet Li is Jean-Claude Van Damme? Listen to that guy. He's like, I am going to kick you in the head. You know, it's like he's barely... decision about what is masculine and what is...
But that's a result of, like, imperialism and colonialism and, like, European supremacy, you know? Like, when you hear European accent, you think, like, oh, well, it's a white and educated person, you know? And then when you hear an Asian accent, you're like, oh, it's just a filthy immigrant who has been here and doesn't speak the language, and it makes me very frustrated because they speak whatever, you know. And I also think that Latino accents, like, there's also there's a lot of like it's just as loaded as the Asian accent, because it's like, think about how many like a Latina actress, like, think of how many like maid roles that she has to go out for with like
or
thick
a sexualized
accents. Yeah, totally
person.
Yeah, imagine how many times, like, when she looks at like the character description, it says spicy or fiery, you know. That's the other thing.
But in a way, it's not, I don't think saying completely I won't do that is the correct approach to me.
Yeah
But it's really, you got to look at the writing or this character. Is there anywhere you can go with this character? Like, look, like with the Han character, I feel like there was some place he could have went with it if he was real truthful with it. But at the end of the day, nothing wrong with Matthew Moy. He's making his money. He's my boy.
Yeah.
But he played into kind of a caricature, and the writer kind of wrote it that way. Silicon Valley, Jing Yang could have easily went down that road.
Yes, totally.
But, you know, as it progressed, he became more of an asshole, and I try to every time put in something else into it.
Yeah.
You know, where is this comedy, my attitude, like whatever. Yeah. Like, I try to make this a real person.
Yeah. Jing Yang, you can describe him without mentioning that he's Chinese, and you can still describe him as a person.
Right.
That's the thing. You can't do that with a character like Han. Everything is hanging on the fact that he's a Korean stereotype.
Grew.
Yeah, exactly. He never moves beyond the fact that every punchline is the fact that he's a stereotype of an Asian man. Which is where
Han the
the restaurant owner.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Who's like sexless and weird and like
small and yeah, like just right, like always. Right, right.
Yeah. I was going to say about the, because I'm thinking about Ken in the Hangover. Like, I think I've seen half of a Hangover, and I haven't seen all five of them. But like, there's also status too. Like it's a cheap way of mitigating other things. But it's like, even if your character might be stereotypical in nine ways, if they control whether everyone lives or dies. Mm-hmm. And aren't able to be controlled by other people within the scene, that's a mitigating factor, is it not? Or no, I guess not. I mean, I'm getting some blank stares.
No, it's his character is a very pivotal character, and I guess at the end of the day, he didn't need it to be Chinese or like with that accent.
Yeah, I mean,
but comedically. Everything just worked, and I think if it wasn't for him, if it was any other Asian actor doing that character, it wouldn't have worked as well. Like, he is an amazing actor. Like, like I said, nothing wrong with Matthew Moy, but if you took the Matthew Moy approach of playing this character as kind of like a caricature, as he did maybe more in Two Broke Girls, like, I don't think it would have worked. And Ken's character, like Mr. Chow, like you said, like, you don't have to describe him as, like, the Asian dude or whatever. Like, he was, like, an crazy badass person.
I only said that about Jin Yang, so take the compliment, Jimmy.
Okay, cool.
I thought we were very progressive in handling Ken in Community, because he was like, there was no indication that he knew what race he was.
Yeah, totally. Right. His lunacy transcended.
Yeah,
his
he
race.
Was he was mentally yes, ill. Yes, that yes. was his character.
Yeah, but then we get into the territory of what Jazz Waters was talking about, which is like he's a race neutral character, and like on the one hand, that is progress for us because he's just a funny character, period, regardless of race. But there is another like half of me that thirsts for things that are specific to my experience and my race and my culture, you know?
It's important. Like,
I want both of those itches scratched.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't think it's shunning one for the other. It's hopefully we get enough representation in all of these
that
things.
We get all of it. Because, like, I think you, as, like, a white writer and a white showrunner, like, there's only one of those itches that you can scratch, which is what you did with Senior Chang, you know?
Right.
Because you're not able to write the other part.
Here's the thing that's the character of Senior Chang and let's say Troy have in common. Like these are characters that were written. Well, no, that's not true. They don't have that in common at all. Chang was written because someone said, "What if the guy that jumped out of the trunk in The Hangover could be on the show? Would you write a character for him?" And then we wrote Senior Chang. But like, I guess I was going to say, like, the flip side of the Jazz Waters philosophy coin is simply that. I found what she said about like the cons of writing race neutral so profound. Like, the pro of writing race neutral, regardless of whether you're a white writer or a writer of color and you write a race neutral character and then cast an actor of color, the actor can then bring not only their height and their shoe size and the tenor of their voice and their memories of their mother, but also, yes, any background that they have,
right?
Into the character. And because the character is race neutral, the actor can then make the character whatever the actor which then becomes, like, as far as what you're seeing on the television screen, even though to Jazz's point, and I think really specifically her nightmare scenario is me writing race-neutral characters and then, okay, black people line up to play the part of the dentist that I wrote not knowing it would be black. And then the black people all take turns auditioning to say, I'm pulling your tooth out. And it's like, and it's this micro-assimilation on a grand scale. Like, the way she said it was like, yeah, and then there's just like black people see that person on TV and they go, it's like Uncanny Valley. Like, I don't, that was her like end of the spectrum.
Right. Well, because when you write race neutral, it's really to benefit, to make white people feel better about watching something, you know, like it makes like people of color palatable.
But another way to look at race neutral writing is to just say, this is just neutral writing where, as with the character of Troy, who I was like, oh, this, I pictured this guy as like a meathead white, like Nebraska quarterback with big, thick arms, mm-hmm. like a and a chubby, ruddy face and short blonde hair, and like, and then the Russo brothers were like, yeah, but have you seen this guy Donald Glover and this Derek comedy thing? And watch the video. And as a white writer in 2006 or whatever it was, my response was like, his arms are really skinny, and also he's black. Like, is it okay? Like, I had all these questions that it turns out were stupid for asking, because it was like, do you want Donald Glover to play your part? And that experience taught me, like, yeah, like, all the better than race neutral characters, because then you can put
like, right, and then you let the person bring their own flavor to it.
Yeah,
imagine if Jimmy got the part of Troy, and then he decided to play Troy with an accent.
Yeah.
You know, like, it changes the character, and he brings his own stuff into it.
Yeah, and then you slowly, as in TV, the writer's room then sees the dailies and goes like, wow, oh, he did a riff about his dad being a fisherman or whatever. Let's talk about, like, you know, it's like, oh, the character might become progressively more.
A lot of times the improv is what gives a lot of juice to what's to come for the character.
Totally.
And I try to take those chances. That's kind of like my pitch, you know? Because I can't go up to the writer and be like, hey, how about this? That never works.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
but kind of subconsciously pitching through improv. Zach Woods is very good at that. And his character kind of became more of what he was improvising, this weird character that he kind of brought up. And it was amazing to see
Zach
that.
Zach Woods is such an incredible improviser. It's insane.
Insane. He literally comes up with like a whole script of backstory that he's ready to roll every take. I don't know how he does it. Maybe he actually does a lot of homework. But you know what?
Maybe he's secretly Asian and does homework.
But what you were saying about how, you know, was it 2006 when you're a white guy and you don't even know if this was okay or like what the
I didn't know if I would be I didn't know if it would be more woke of me.
Yeah.
It wasn't a word yet, but like I didn't know if I was supposed to go through. I knew it was probably a bad idea to go through the script and add the word yo to. But I wasn't quite sure if not doing that was part of a problem.
Right, you don't know which way to go.
Yeah.
Because
I didn't know Donald, and I didn't know a lot of black people, and I'd never cast a show. So I was like, I don't know what my job is here.
You're obviously not racist, but you don't know which way to go to not offend anyone, because that wasn't the intention, obviously. And I think that's why a lot of times I don't even like to talk about these conversations, because I don't like to blame, like, say, a failed audition because of my race or anything like that. But I think at the end of the day, it is important, because, like, you know, white people like Dan out here needs to know, yo, let's give these guys an opportunity even.
Yeah.
And it's, like, cool to do that.
Yes, yes.
That's what I think. And that's
any
a big
opportunity is better than no opportunity.
Comedy and drama. Comedy is like, that's the thing, is, like, I was humbled by my experience in Community, because the Russo brothers were like, they're like, let's cast Alison Brie. Like, she might not be who you pictured, but like, she's a fucking star. It was and it was like, oh, we assembled like a cast of stars.
Yeah.
You know, where I was as a writer by myself without the Russo brothers, I would have been like, well, I don't know if this person's quite what I had in mind, or this character is more of like this, you know. And they're like, just, you know, your script is a point of departure. It's a starting point. So that dovetails with this idea of like, when is Jimmy O Yang gonna be able to just like be thought of as a person to bring in? And part of the answer is, well, when the scripts, maybe to some extent, you're writing characters that are kind of just like pistons, you know. They're like, they're I don't know what the metaphor is. They're basic, and then you're like, we're gonna fill a character into this like with an actor.
But this is also, Community is a great example, because you really did like assemble a cast of like incredible people who all like went on to like great success. But it's a great example of, I hope you're listening, Max Landis. Like, it's a great example of giving people a chance, and that's how you get people to become stars. You don't sit there and go like, well, I only want to see stars, and the only stars are white, so I guess that's my excuse for casting white, and that's how things work.
It's the fear of it, because you want your show to work out. You want your movie to work out, so you want to do what's been done.
Yeah, but if you are listening, Max Landis, and you're feeling bad, I will...
I hope you feel bad, Max Landis. I want you to feel bad every day.
That the reason Community got picked up is because Ben Silverman said if Chevy Chase was in it, it was a guaranteed pickup.
Why are you constantly going to bat for Max Landis
because,
now?
Because it's like, it's
we can
hate his philosophy and what he does.
No,
but,
I hate his fucking attitude about it.
You just did what Max Landis does in your eyes criminally, which is to hold up reality as evidence for your thing.
No. It's the fucking entitlement.
By the way,
dude.
Max Landis, this is how it really works. It's like, well, no, it's not. The show got picked up because of an old white guy from Three Amigos.
It's not because he quote unquote told the truth. It's because he was so fucking smug and entitled about it. Because for someone to be that fucking privileged, to be rich, white, male, and the son of a celebrated, famous director, to then say, hey, people of color, you shouldn't get pissed because you don't understand how the movies work, and you should fucking accept it.
He said like, that? Well, I have no idea what this hate is coming
from. That's what I'm pissed about.
Damn.
Well, yeah. Can you?
I don't understand why you're suddenly defending him all of a sudden.
I'm not defending
you
him.
You are.
You said, by the way, Max Landis, if you're listening, and your point was, here's how the show worked.
Here's how
it got on the air.
This show
and
illustrates
how
the opposite of what you're saying.
We had to cast Chevy Chase, or none of those people of color were allowed to ever have jobs.
I want a friendship breakup with you.
I want a friendship breakup with the society that makes you mad. You and I are both on the same side about how we wish it didn't work that way.
I'm going to catch Jimmy up because he hasn't heard
well,
this.
You're going to get so riled up explaining Max Landis to him.
I don't know this, but was Sidney Poitier another option for Chevy Chase instead?
This has nothing to do with comedia. This is what Max said to all the people. He made like a vlog, first of all. Like, how can you get more narcissistic than making a vlog? when people were pissed about Scarlett Johansson's casting in Ghost in the Shell, and he made this like video that he released unprompted, like who was asking for him to weigh in on this? And he was like, look, people who are pissed about her, like calling it whitewashing.
Yeah.
You're pissed because it's dumb for you to be pissed.
Did he make that movie? He made that movie.
No. He had nothing to do with it. That's the thing.
So
he
what
had
the fuck?
Nothing
like,
to do with it.
If he made that movie, I get it.
He had nothing to do with it and then took it upon himself to make a video to say, if you're pissed about this, it's because you don't understand how movies work, and it's because they had to cast her because to make a movie like that you can only cast an A-list star, and there are no Asian A-list stars, therefore the only way they could cast it was A-list. But I was like, first of all, no one invited you to talk,
like stay in your lane,
stay
bro.
In your fucking lane, yeah. Max Landis, and then
that's the main
but
thing.
Also too, it's like, if that's your fucking attitude, like that's how you keep, how do you think people become A-list? They don't just get born A-list. It's because they work their way up. And if you never make opportunities for people of color to become A-list, then you can keep like making this racist system go. And it's people like that who are at the fucking top of privilege then saying like, well, why are you fucking pissed? You shouldn't be pissed because like that's how it works.
Yeah, that's
fucking
the lethal combination. It's like when logic is on your side, you should actually be bummed out about that. Like, entropy is a bad thing.
Uh-huh.
The fact that what goes up must come down, the fact that the way it was yesterday is probably going to be the way it was tomorrow, these are bad things. And so it's one thing to acknowledge them and explain them, but like as I've said before, like, the reason why we both agree what he did was a party foul is because, dude, you could have the same amount of knowledge about this stuff and you could be an agent of advocacy. Yeah. You could go, you know, I hear you all talking about this, and I know I'm not invited to the conversation, but I have a lot of knowledge about how movies are made, and thought I'd like to point out while you're all talking about it that here's, you know, because it and if and it wouldn't be, it's this weird thing where it's like, oh, these people are upset and want change, and then the part of your brain that goes, somebody better let them know that change is hard.
Well,
who
no,
wants
you,
to be
yeah.
that messenger?
But also, when you're the fucking rich fucking land baron to, like, then tell the, like, feudal peasants, like, accept it, idiots.
Yeah, because I think the problem is whatever he said could be the truth, or at least the truth to him. But what you're saying is he should be more of a supporter of the change
instead
of
saying,
that
accept
instead of
it.
Yeah, saying fuck you guys, accept
well,
it.
Yeah,
and also guess
that...
what, he's wrong. I still maintain that he's wrong. Look at Star Wars, look at all the Marvel movies. Was Chris Hemsworth an A-list star before Thor? No, he wasn't. Was Chris Evans an A-list star before Captain America? But they got to be in like $100 million movies starring. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. what he's saying is not true. So again, fuck you, Max Landis. You don't know shit.
Well,
fight me. I mean, fight me, Max Landis.
It the cool version of him would be calling out the studios that didn't go the route that you're describing.
Yeah,
he would
but
say,
in this timeline, there is no such thing as a cool version of Max Landis.
There's a way to play it, right?
Yes!
But he didn't play it right. Well, and also, that's why people need to go see Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes, and go see Crazy Rich Asians, Max Landis. Buy out a theater to make it up to me.
Yeah, yeah. Do that and, like, you know, okay, buy 100 tickets to Crazy Rich Asians and buy, like, 100 copies of my book,
yes.
How to American, and then all be forgiven. I think you're a good guy, you know?
All right, let's take a quick break so that I can cool the fuck down.
I don't want you to cool
down. I'm pitting.
I
gotta take a break because I need a second drink and I need to take off my sweatshirt.
I like my gow at 50 RPMs. My favorite thing, this isn't a topic, but so I don't care if we're recording, but my favorite new thing in the Black Panther development is people tweeting, like, just news or observations about how Black Panther is continuing to smash records and like and then, like, the 15 replies underneath it with, like, white nerds that don't know. And I don't know if I'm projecting, but I feel like I'm just going, like, racist, 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 racist.
Uh-huh.
Because none of them would say that they were racist. Like, they're
sure,
not, like, rednecks. They're,
yeah, yeah.
But they're, it's like, you go, like someone will tweet, like, you know, holy shit, Black Panther's 5 weeks in a row at number one. That's the last movie to do that is Avatar, and then like a bunch of white nerds underneath it going like, yeah, so what? Avatar sucked.
And I'm
like, but part of me was like, holy shit, this is King's dream come reality. This is white people saying, big deal, a movie with a bunch of black people in it being a huge box office success. Box office isn't everything,
right?
That's like equality, all of us, like, forced upon white people in the only way they can achieve it, which is you pitting their racism against capitalism. And they have to choose to be like, they're like, there's going to be now white flight into the world of, like, fancy foreign film that only 200 people watch, because white nerds are going to be like, Marvel movies, that's for black people. That's equality. like,
all right, I don't know if I quite understand your reasoning, but that would be great. If I would love to see the day when white people said Marvel movies are for black people.
I mean, it's
because then that would mean Marvel made so many movies with about black characters that you would get to that point. So in that case, I'm all for it.
Well, yeah, that's the delightful thing that I'm seeing is people going like, holy crap, Black Panther is a huge success. And people who have too high an IQ and who know what racism is and who don't want to acknowledge in themselves, that are just, they just resent Black Panther for your good old basic reason, which is like, I don't like being told, I don't like the word black in my superhero. I don't like, I don't, why does this all have to be about race? Like, that's the...
And then they're like, have you seen Black Mirror? It's so good.
You know, I started a rap group when I was in high school.
Yellow Panthers.
It was called the Yellow Panthers. Maybe that could be a superhero movie. It was me, my black friend Julian, and then a dude, Yuji, who was half black and half Asian. So we had like 1.5, you know, Asian guys and 1.5 black guys. Yellow Panthers was the perfect name.
I would love to see a Yellow Panther movie that Harmon solo wrote.
Oh, shit.
I don't want to write any Marvel movies. How's that, Marvel?
Do you want to write Chinese China?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Which is a project Harmon pitched that I would write.
Yeah. Chinese China?
Well, yeah. I can't write it. I'll get so much flack.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's about a guy who goes to China. Is he a white guy or is he a regular Chinese guy?
Well, you cast Paul Rudd, so.
But I cast Paul Rudd
the
as
most
a...
Chinese white guy I know. You know.
Well, it's like it's an everyday guy, and he's I guess he's visiting China, and then someone comes to him and goes like, "Hey, it's pretty crazy here," huh? And he's like, "Yeah, it's China. It's like craziest." And then he's like, "You want to see something crazier?" And then he brings him to. A little door, and like you go through it, and you're in Chinese China.
Oh, that's actually cool. Is it, wait, is it animated or is it live action?
It's
Are you coming aboard as a producer?
I'm on.
It's an imaginary
Can I be the guy to open the door?
Yes! Only if you grow a long, wispy beard.
Dream bigger, Jimmy. This is
And I want you to grow out long-ass pinky fingernails.
With a Fu Manchu, he's like, he's selling bootleg DVDs in Chinatown of China. But then he's like, let me show you this door, Mr. White Man.
Oh, I thought you were saying there's, in Chinese China, the bootlegs are like legit movies. Like, it's like Citizen Kane because
it's Citizen Chang.
Because they're bootlegs of bootlegs. So it's like, it's like if Weird Al's cousin made a parody of like a virgin, it'd be like a surgeon.
So we got a deal, or what's going on?
Like,
you guys, Chevy Chase on this. We got a deal.
Okay,
on this whole thing.
See, that's how
on
it
this
works.
Whole thing.
That's how it works, Jessica.
You know what? If Paul Rudd would actually do it, I'm sure this will be a immediate sell.
Chinese China. You thought China was weird. Chinese China.
Yeah.
All right.
What's the New Zealand guy doing here?
You 100% have to star in it and be an executive producer.
What happens in Chinese China? It's like Alice in Wonderland kind of?
Look, I spent half an hour trying to get Harmon to explain it to me, and I don't know.
Well, that's
like, is it more Chinese than like China?
Yeah, well, you guys went to like a long fingernails and all that stuff. Like, I don't truck in that stuff. You know, like,
you're more elevated. He's much more woke than us.
I'm like a Neil Gaiman type. Like, I'm like a sci-fi like guy. Like, the concept of Chinese China is more about like subversion. It's not like about being twice as racist. That's your guy's gimmick.
Yeah, that's our shtick, Jimmy.
Maybe that's the world where it's like reverse Rent the White Guy, where the white dude's no longer cool, and like Chinese people is looked at as like the master race.
Okay, you know what I would love to happen now is, so I've been campaigning for Harmon to go to China with me, and I think you should come too.
Have you been?
Never.
No.
He's never been to Asia.
Oh my God.
Dude, he doesn't like Chinese food.
Dude, like you like people would look at you, would be so cool.
I didn't know that part, by the way. But, you know, Paris is too Chinese for me.
I mean, to be fair, there are a lot of Chinese people.
Because there's not enough gravy. And
wait, have you been to like Monterey Park?
Where's that?
Okay, maybe we should start him.
Yeah. I think we should
go to Monterey Park.
Yeah, take him to like Monterey Park or an Alhambra restaurant together,
so
and then we'll
East
record.
That's the new Chinatown. Everybody's Chinese there, so we should take you there.
I mean, it's the new Chinatown.
If you could,
China.
If we could find a way to get me into Chinese food, which is not like, that's not me folding my arms going,
you're not into
I don't like Chinese food. Yeah. Like,
but I also think he's never had actual Chinese food.
Because I said the same thing about seafood, because I grew up in Milwaukee. So like, you go to Red Lobster in Milwaukee and it's like,
it's not good.
Well, it's like, well, this lobster didn't come from Lake Michigan. And then I came to LA and it took me so many years because I was like, oh, I don't like seafood. And then I ate at a Santa Monica seafood restaurant. I was like,
right.
Oh, shit, this is why people be into lobster.
Oh, we got to take you to legit Chinese restaurant.
Yes.
But that's not too Asian.
No. Like, we can't take him to, like, you know,
shit with like sea cucumber or something. Can't handle that.
Can I tell you some stuff?
Like a beef roll place.
Yeah. I mean, here's some stuff that I don't like.
Okay.
In food. Stringiness. So isn't that like the conversation's over?
No! Are you kidding? Chinese cuisine is so varied.
And diverse.
Yes, it's such a vast country.
I'll tell you something I really like, which is not Chinese, but it is Asian.
Uh-huh.
Korean barbecue.
Oh, that's amazing. Korean barbecue is like...
Because it's strips of meat.
It's but freedom. It's the most American thing. Korean barbecue is literally the most American thing. It's just meat, unlimited meat on a grill in front of your face.
I went to the screening of Okja, and it was like, you watch this movie and it's like, oh man, okay, I gotta be vegetarian, don't I? Like, while you're watching it, because you're like, it's really gripping you and like going like, you gotta be vegetarian. This is crazy. And then we went to the after party and there's like meat hors d'oeuvres.
Oh my God.
The director's like eating one. I'm like, oh, so you're not a, you made the, he's like, oh no, I'm Korean. Like, this is a deal breaker. It's like asking a Texan, like, oh, you made that anti-hot wing movie, but all right.
All right, we're gonna do this. So I've recruited Jimmy. We're gonna take you to a restaurant in Monterey Park. Yeah. We're going to ease you into Chinese food. And then the moment you taste that Chinese food and let its deliciousness melt on your mouth, in your tongue, we're going to then blindfold you and take you to China.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to Shanghai me.
Yes.
Literally.
We're literally going to Shanghai you.
Shanghai you.
Yeah.
Maybe try Ding Tai Fung first, because that's like...
Oh, that's like white
nice,
people
nice, but white and Asian.
Yeah.
It's very authentic, but
yes.
White people love it also.
Yes, white people love that place. I think it's overrated.
I think the only way I would ever be brave enough to go to China would be with Chinese people, because I just...
Yeah.
The
yeah.
thing that freaks me out is like, I can't... I either got to be a baby... Or I can't, it's like taking away, like my ability to like, yeah, I just get, I like, again, like as far as I've gone exotically is Paris. And I'm like, oh, these people are so over my shit. Like I'm trying to, they're trying to understand me.
Yeah.
They,
but now you can go to a country where people are so into your shit, they'll pay
yeah.
you to sit at their business.
Seriously.
Yeah.
There's nowhere I can go where like I'm cool. You can go most places and you'll be the American dude. That's super
yeah.
awesome.
Dude, there are like companies, like corporations in China that will rent a white guy to sit in on like a presentation that they're making or some
yeah.
sort of announcement just because it lends them legitimacy that
yes.
it looks like they employ a white guy.
True.
You could be that white guy.
Yeah.
You'll get a free suit out of it.
We're going to make this happen. It's,
yeah.
it's a progressive step.
Yeah.
We're going to get him, lure him into some like Ding Tai Fung and then take him to Monterey Park, you know, maybe like a karaoke, you know, with some domies and some Korean barbecue. And
yeah,
then...
You just had to slip in the domie thing? This is all just like a fucking backdoor pilot to you being a domie.
Yeah, I actually own one of karaoke, so.
I've been listening to this podcast, The History of English, and... it goes back to the root of like all it's the Indo-European like language, and it's like, it seems like so you have this East versus West thing, which is like because you guys were talking about during the break, like I was shocked, I guess shocked in quotes, but like okay, Cantonese and Shanghainese and Mandarin, they're as different.
Shanghainese.
I'm sorry,
that's okay.
What did I say? Szechuanese.
You said Shaiwanese.
Shaiwanese.
Yeah. It's like a Shanghai Taiwanese.
they're as different as Italian and French and Portuguese. Like
yes.
I'm like, oh wow, like. It is a language thing, right? Like it's like there's like this impenetrable border, like in both hemispheres of the world, there's this fluidity where things flow into each other and affect each other, and then it seems like there's this impenetrable wall where we don't flow. China doesn't flow into the West. Like it doesn't.
Right. It's still very closed down country.
Is it because of language? Is it because?
Well, I think it's the culture. It's still a very communist. Like we still keep everything to ourselves. It's still in a way very imperialist. And in that, because mm-hmm. How many years ago was the Qing Dynasty? It's not that many years ago, right?
It was yeah, still it wasn't. And that
very
was
imperial.
When, and that was actually when they made Beijing the capital. Like the capital wasn't
right.
even Beijing until then.
So, and the Communist Revolution happened, what?
In 1949.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's within people's lifetimes.
Like, my parents went through that shit when the communists kicked open the door and took everything.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it's different, whereas I think Japanese, you get the anime and stuff that's worldwide that is an entertainment form that people
can
understand.
Yeah, there is some flow there. Okay. Yeah.
And
well,
like,
it's capitalism is just, yeah,
Korea
free
with
flow.
K-pop, Korean barbecue, all that stuff. They try to actually reach internationally, whereas China kind of don't give a fuck. Like,
so it's not, okay,
yeah.
It's not a hemisphere.
It's
China.
Also, what China's really, really good at is bootlegging. So it's like they're not making original
yeah,
stuff. They're like bootlegging
sad.
Shit. Yeah. Like they're like, oh, we're just going to take whatever we like about your stuff and just make it cheaper and more available to people.
Yeah.
Except in the case of alphabets, in which case Japan bootlegged their language, calling
then,
you out, Japan.
And then remixed it. And then remixed
yeah.
it. They sampled. It was the first sampling.
I took a semester at Japanese, Japan. I know what's up. I see you. Fucking Chinese bootleg language.
All right. One other thing I wanted to ask you, Jimmy, is in your book, you had your log of all the auditions you went
yes.
on. And listed in there is an audition for Community.
Oh.
I didn't make it. I love the show. I'm a big fan of you guys. I love the show, but I was so stupid. I was doing college tours for my stand-up to make money just so I can pay rent. And back in the day, I wasn't making that much money. It's like nothing. I made like $700 a show.
Oh, you didn't make it to the audition?
I didn't make it to the audition.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize
what
that.
What were you auditioning for?
I don't know. I can pull
it said,
up the log.
It said Glee Club.
Yeah, Glee
member.
Club kid or something. Is yeah. that a thing?
Well, that
yeah.
wouldn't have been a career changer. better to stay on a college tour.
Yeah, I guess.
I think you probably feathered your nest a little. I don't think the kids that got those parts.
Yeah, turned out to be. Yeah.
Are on next
were
week's episode.
Were you guys casting for an Asian? Was it an Asian specific role? I forget.
I proudly say no. We're just looking for Glee Club people and. Obviously, a trickle down from me going like, could we please recognize right. that there's a lot? No, I have no idea.
Yeah. A co-star, Glee Club rapper / dancer.
Yeah, co-star. So it'll be like two yeah. lines or something like that.
Yeah. I guarantee you this. I know the episode and for sure there's no joke in there about, oh, this one's Asian for right. sure. Yeah.
Here, you know what? I think this is a fun little exercise. I'm just going to read to you the description of the characters of all
read
the
shows too. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Of all the
so I have 101 auditions that yeah. led up to the 102nd audition, which turned out to be Silicon Valley.
Wow, yeah. that's very inspirational for people.
I'm just going to read a couple on the first page alone. I'm just going to read a couple of the character descriptions.
Literally, my first auditions.
Yeah. Loud Japanese host. Taiwanese 20 looks like 12. Computer geek. Chinese restaurant.
You got that one,
that's
right?
Perfect. Yeah. That's perfect.
Chinese restaurant owner. Young Asian guy. Walmart employee speaks Mandarin. Mm-hmm. Like, bad karaoke singer. Chinese driver, a young Tony Leung. Young, attractive Chinese.
Okay, definitely. Hello. Definitely didn't get Hello. That one.
Chinese speaking DJ. Asian artist. Hip, attractive Chinese boy. This is painting okay. a different picture than you're painting
all right,
of yourself.
All right.
but if you're seeing a pattern, it's like you'll notice it's like.
White people don't don't have the equivalent.
Except
maybe women. Women probably have the equivalent. Hot
yes.
but doesn't know it. Nerdy type, but you know, it's a, yeah. a right. objectification, dehumanization. Like you can, but and I guess you know from my limited experience, like auditioning, it was like, well, I knew I was going out for slobby computer hacker, blah blah blah. But it's the explicit. Declaration of and Taiwanese Japanese surfer speaks some Mandarin octopus that thinks he's a ninja.
Now looking back, it's like so broad and yeah. terrible those yeah. words. But at the time, I was taking it very seriously. Like I was trying to speak Mandarin like a Taiwanese person.
Yeah,
right. I was trying to DJ in a very specific. Mandarin speaking accent. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, I
yeah.
still try to take
infinitely
it.
Infinitely more thought than the showrunner and the writers
exactly.
ever did.
But sometimes that's what you need, you know? Yeah. Like, that's how Jing Yang started as a two-line part.
Mm-hmm.
And that became a series regular. I think I would like to think yeah. because I put enough thought into it. You
I
know?
Think so. Like, honestly, like, every time I watch that scene where Jin Yang takes Ehrlich to the airport and then he fucking
yes.
throws his duffel bag at him, like, this guy's a maniac. And I laugh every time I watch that. And it's so incredible.
I don't watch HBO programming because of Confederate.
Get out.
Oh, God.
Armin.
Someone's going to make a stand.
So this is later seasons because I only wrote for the first season. So was that scripted or did you improv that?
The throwing of the bag?
The throwing of the bag.
It might have been like a collaborative effort between me and Jamie Babbitt, who was directing the episode. I forget, like, it was... I might have... Like, I always try to come up with ideas. I think that's
yeah.
the... You know, being... I want to be creative within a scene, and it's not just lines. A lot of people think improving is just saying a funny line that's not on the script.
Yeah. Right.
But I think it's the physicality, maybe mm-hmm. pitching like, oh, so my character smoke a cigarette on a special occasion. How about I just have a cigarette dangling in my mouth?
Yeah.
Something like that. One of my favorite scenes was actually going to Lori Bream's baby shower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where I was this confused guy, and I'm always the confused guy, but me and Ehrlich goes to the baby shower. And then I go off. He has a conversation with Amanda Crew. And then I come back, say something. But then I was just looking around for props. And I saw this, like, tiny milk chalice. right? It's just like half and half skim milk. And I asked Mike, I'm like, let me try something. And he's like, go ahead, try it. I think that's the best thing a director can say to you. Yes. It's just, go ahead, try it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I came back and just like start drinking milk out of the half and half milk chalice. And then it worked. And especially it worked when TJ called it out and in improv, it's like, are you drinking skim milk? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, yes, it's half-half.
Yeah. But also then, the detail of you calling it half-half is so great.
Which is how exactly my mom say half and half.
Yes.
It's half-half.
It's so special drink.
Yeah, what I love about Jin Yang is that, like, what people don't realize is that the Chinese accent is very, very difficult to get. And, like, most quote-unquote Chinese accent you see on TV is, like, this weird pigeon Chinese
like
that doesn't
Bruce
exist.
Lee Cantonese accent.
Yeah, but that doesn't really exist. In, like yours is very real because it's a real accent.
It's specific
you know?
For my mother.
Well, can you
and,
play, well
and
illustrate it with examples.
Dude, I can't. I can't. I can't do it. That's the funny thing.
You can't
is,
do
I
an
can't.
Impression of the white people's Chinese accent that's...
I'm just not a good actor, dude. It's terrible. I'm a really, really... I'm self-aware enough to know I'm a terrible
so
actor.
You're gonna make me do it?
Yes, you have to.
So you're saying me doing this makes
your...
me help
yes,
fight
top.
Racism.
Yes, yeah, fine, I whatever. So. Mm-hmm. Yes, you get a pass.
Okay, so well, give me a scenario, like an occupation or a...
Oh boy, we're gonna go this deep into it. Okay,
is it just a line or you want a whole
let's
backstory?
Let's lean into
character?
It. You're Chinese restaurant owner that Jimmy auditioned for, and you want to tell the customers that their coupon is expired.
All right. Is someone going to be the customer?
Oh, man.
I can do it.
All right.
Now, what race are you?
I'm white.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're going to be first time in my life. This is groundbreaking.
Are you
going to
be
guys.
Like your agent?
Yes. Yeah, excuse me. So, excuse me, sir. So I have a 20% off coupon here for the Szechuan Tasty restaurant.
Yeah, that no good. You no use here.
But I clipped it off a newspaper. It says it's good till...
No good. No coupon. You go away. Get out.
Is that Korean? I don't know what that is.
But that's what she's
not
saying.
Real. It's not a real
that's
accent.
That's what she's saying. Yeah. That it's...
It's just pigeon. It's weird pigeon. Cartoony.
It's a cartoony caricatured accent that a lot of people... You know, avoid playing. I think when people say they avoid playing accents,
that's what they're thinking.
It's that pitfall.
That's what they're not thinking of Jin Yang's accent, which is a very, very real accent.
And even in Patriots Day, I keep going back to that. Danny Meng, he's a Chinese guy from the Sichuan province, and he speaks in the Sichuan dialect, which I don't know how to speak, but I actually picked up his English accent with a Sichuan dialect. So it's close to Jin Yang's Mandarin accent, but there's certain words like L and N. He'll confuse those because that's how Sichuan people speak. So instead of saying like lonely, he'll say noni, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's, it's all about just being specific and actually making this person a real human being instead of like, you know, like a
like my
shitty,
yes, my
like,
character.
Like you
well,
know,
can I,
here.
Just in my defense,
coupon owner.
You guys set me up with a very negative, like, oh, he's, you said, you, think about the racist stereotype you created. You're telling him his coupon's no good. Like, could you be more? Oh, should I also tell him about the Chinese, the ancient secret? Give me like here, like see what happens when I just endow
what's
me
a,
with
non-Asian stereotype. What's
I accept your coupon. Okay.
No, no, no,
okay.
No. How about why don't you tell him that he made the lacrosse team of which you are captain?
Okay.
Yes. So I'm the kid that
I'm his coach. Yeah. I'm his coach.
Yes. And oh no, you're the captain of the lacrosse team, and Jimmy, you are wondering if you made the team.
Okay.
So it's just been so hard. I've been working really hard. So
Jimmy. Yo. That was a callback. Right? If you're just tuning in, that was that the callback was that that's my New Zealand guy.
Fall back on the callback, you know. Fall back on the callback.
But that's also what you think of a positive interaction between a Chinese person and a white person.
Jimmy. You make the team. No, that's Japanese.
That's
right?
Not bad. That's like Pat Morita.
Yeah, but again, it's a fake accent. It's
Jimmy,
not real.
Jimmy, you make team. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I can't. Well, I can't roll my sleeves up. You got. If I'm taking a stab at it, you assholes could at least.
Well, I feel like Jimmy, you can probably do it, right? Like a pigeoning, like what the typical accent they would ask you to do is.
Right, like a shitty accent.
Yeah.
Like I could have played Jing Yang in that accent, right?
Yeah, totally.
Like,
but you didn't.
But also, but you know what? To the writers and everybody's credit, like me and Mike, the first day on set, like we had a conversation. Do you want like a more Cantonese or Mandarin? Like we kind of had that conversation, and I think they have the presence of mind to see what's real or not. You know, they might not be Chinese, but they've encountered these people.
Yeah. Or just at least they know that Chinese people are not a monolith, and there's all kinds of Chinese people.
I mean, if you look at like King of the Hill, like Ken Suppanosophone. He's from Laos.
Yeah.
One of the funniest jokes on King of the Hill is Hank Hill going up to his Laos neighbor, Laotian neighbor, and Hank Hill's like, "So are you Chinese or Japanese?" And he's like, "I'm from Laos." And he's like, "So is that Chinese or Japanese?" It's a great bit. But I think, you know, that's a different time back in the day, and Ken Suppanosophone was played by a white guy. But just creating for a white dude to create a Laotian character, I think that was like really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
because I didn't even know about Laos.
Well, because the go-to with Asian is Chinese, Japanese, or Korean, just as the joke goes, you know? And for him to pick this, like, very small Southeast Asian country.
It's specific.
Like,
he made it specific.
Very specific.
He probably grew up with a Laotian dude or something.
Yeah. By the way, I found out that when you talk about people, you say Lao. And when you talk about things, you say Laotian.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Lao. I guess that was one of their failings.
Wait,
so you say like, if you're talking about a person, you're like, oh, that person's Lao.
Okay.
But then if you're talking about somebody...
Is it Laos or Lao?
No, you say... If you're describing a person, like it's even equivalent of saying, oh, that's a French person, you say, oh, that person is Lao.
It's Lao.
And then if you're talking about... like you can say like, oh, well, this is Laotian food.
It's a noun and an adjective, Ted,
Right. Okay, here are the odds of me retaining that.
Well, here are the odds of you needing to know that information.
Well, it's just gonna trip me up. Like, I'll... That's part of the problem. That's what I call the white man's burden. It's like the best you can do is if you don't want to be racist is you just see a bunch of like road spikes ahead of you and you just start swerving all over the road and then everyone's like, "What are you doing? You're crazy! Like you just hit 8 deer and a kid." I'm like, "Well, I felt like I was in a trouble area, so I started asking questions." And
then I just started calling everything Lao.
But that's exactly what happened in relation to for real. Like, because I'm like, I have so many experiences with. There's so many New Zealand people and Australian people out here. Like it is like they're not like offended to the max if you confuse them, but it is you feel like a heel if you you hear a New Zealand accent and you're like, "Oh, good day, mate," and they're like, "They're wrong." And that is exactly what, because I was like, "Oh, I'm going to do this New Zealand thing," and then because I wanted to stay completely away from it,
right.
I went, "Oi, oi, 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 oi." That's the effect
If we ever make Whiting Wong's action figures, I want your action figure to just say that.
Oi, 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 oi,
oi, oi. Oh, it's like a squeeze toy? You like squeeze his hand?
Or like, it's like it's a drawstring, you know?
I went to Australia for like a four city tour with my podcast, and I was looking back and like, what a dumb thing for me to try to accomplish. I was like, I'm gonna try to master the Australian accent for the Australian fans. What a great idea.
Let's hear it.
But I was like, I reduced it to the phrase I like that hat, mate. I can't even do it anymore.
That sounded like you were in so much pain.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the funny thing is that Australians are never that tense about anything.
Yeah,
but I'm tense
it sounded like you were passing like a kidney stone.
Oh, like that hit, right? it's all about like I researched on YouTube all of the like different shapes of your mouth you're supposed to do for different vowels,
God.
And I was like, oh, and I put that sentence together myself. I was very proud of it.
Uh-huh. This phase of your life, this period of your life is basically just YouTube tutorials. All right.
Well,
Jimmy O Yang.
Did we even address anything? We didn't have to. No, I mean, we addressed a ton of shit.
We addressed a ton of shit.
What was the theme of this podcast?
Well, no, actually, the biggest, we hit a huge popcorn ball that I tried to get Dante. I was like, oh, I can't wait to talk about this. And then Dante was like, well, I'm Filipino. It's like a.
It's talking about Dante Bosco.
Yeah, yeah, I know Dante.
But that was actually really fruitful, finally getting a guest to talk about this, like. It's that accent area when you like go in and people are like, oh, can you make them a little?
Because people who are born in America and people who are born in Asia also have very different opinions about. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. And look, at the end of the day, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing like a British accent unless I'd worked on it for a year, because I don't want to insult nobody with that accent, mm-hmm. you know. So I kind of get it. I empathize it. I'm not saying like fuck you or anything.
Yeah.
But I know where they're coming from for, you know, say an ABC that don't want to do an Asian accent.
When you were learning English in school in Hong Kong, were you learning British English?
I was, but everybody in Hong Kong has a very Cantonese accent.
Yeah.
Like very much literally like mm-hmm. Bruce Lee. So that's not even offensive. That's like people in Hong Kong, that's how they talk.
But it is very interesting. Like, especially before the handover, when you'd watch like Hong Kong news, like everybody spoke with like a British accent. British Cantonese inflected accent.
Yeah, if you went to international school in Hong Kong, you would speak with a British accent.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong there.
Yeah. All right. So Jimmy O. Yang has a really, really fun book out called How to American. It's out now. How to American, An Immigrant's Guide to Disappointing Your Parents. you should definitely go out and buy it. It was a very breezy and fun read for me.
Thank you.
Yeah. Come back.
Do you have anything else you want to plug?
When is this episode going out?
Thursday.
Oh, Thursday. Oh, Friday. I'll be at Book Soup doing a book signing on Sunset. And I got some tour dates. I'm doing some stand-up, so you can go on jimmycomedy.com for all that.
Jimmycomedy.com.
Silicon Valley, coming back this Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
But without TJ Miller, I'm out.
His white representative is gone. He's out.
I look forward to this being the rise of Jin Yang.
I think it's a good one. At first, I was worried that TJ was gone, because we had like literally like Malone Stockton.
You guys had such a good rapport.
Lauren Hardy. Like,
yes, totally.
He's like my man, you know?
Yeah.
And but it turned out kind of to be a blessing in disguise, because it let Jin Yang kind of go interact with everyone else now.
Yes.
And kind of be a menace to everybody. So,
yeah.
You guys, you see.
All right.
That's your homework assignment, Whiting Wong's fans.
A decent enough episode, in this white man's opinion.
Oh, boy. All right. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, guys.
Oh, yeah. It's a good show.